Hour of the program, Chris Thomas leading you up until 10 o'clock, 6 to 10 weeknights here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Been a busy, busy program. We got Falcons news, Braves news. We've been covering it all. Tomorrow we'll get into some Hawks talk. Caleb Johnson's going to stop by. We'll make our picks. Warren gained another game on me. He's now up by three.
Oh, that kicker. That 13.5 saved me, sir.
It did. It's getting late early here, to quote Yogi Berra. I got to make a comeback, but I went for a desperation play last week, and it screwed me over. But we'll get into that tomorrow as we make our picks, as we do each and every Thursday. We're both winning. We're both making you money, but I'm down by three games. Not good. Okay, 404-726-0929. Took plenty of your calls on the Falcons quarterback situation. We'll take more calls tomorrow as well. You guys know the drill. Anytime I'm on the air, I love to chat with y'all. I love my nighttime crew here on Chris Thomas Tonight. So we'll continue the Falcons discussion tomorrow. But right now, I want to let you hear from, you know, when you have a season like this and things are going the way that you are, you got to look at the bright spots. And one of the biggest bright spots, a guy that's really coming on right now for the Falcons, is Jalen Walker. He and James Pierce having this tandem pass rush thing is really starting to pay dividends and looks like it was a home run pick by Terry Fontenot, something you can put in the positive ledger for him to his credit. So let's hear that conversation. Our stud edge first-round pick, Jalen Walker, joined Dukes and Bell.
As Jalen walks in the room, we got to chop it up. How about them dogs, first and foremost?
We can just talk dogs if you want, though.
I mean, let's just stay in that realm, Jalen.
Yeah.
Man, first of all, for you individually, I'm assuming it was tough to not go through camp the way you wanted to and start the season going through the injury stuff that you were dealing with. But, man, you look so far past that now. Talk about that journey for you here in your rookie season, because coming in, you know this, there have been high expectations for what we expected from you, the fan base, and everybody's like, man, Jalen's balling. What's this process been like for you?
Yeah, you know, just sticking to the grind, you know, making myself available. To begin with, you know, the energy, the injury is no fun for anybody. But knowing myself, you know, I had to protect myself, you know, just the way person I am, you know, always on go, trying to be full speed all the time. Finally getting back to that 100% mark for me was a big deal. And, of course, each week the progression of, you know, just staying on the grind, being in the book, staying on the field, you know, just getting better every single week.
Because guys were asking us and say, look, we can't lie. We had to get to see Jalen because the soft tissue injuries, to your point, take forever. And then, man, to see what you did, like the New England game, that's a big-time NFL play.
Strip sack!
Same thing, you know, and you do it in Berlin, too. So, I mean, feel like you're getting – I mean, Georgia fans know what you're capable of. Now you feel like you're 100%. You can do this stuff every week.
Yeah, you know, it's just the opportunity to just be out there is something I look forward to every single week.
How was that Berlin experience, man? Because I was in the stands.
Right.
It was goosebumps for me. What was it like being on the
field?
It
was surreal. And I took a couple moments, you know, before the game just to look around, because, you know, the history that would happen within the stadium, the history of football being played in Berlin, and just me being out there in general. You know, that was just an opportunity that people don't get.
Right.
Jalen, four sacks on the season, guys. We're talking to Jalen Walker here live at Flowery Branch as we get ready for the Saints. The injury to our quarterback, man, Michael Penix. I mean, what's the mood been like? What's the situation? Have you had a chance to talk to him?
Right. You know, I haven't seen Mike, but, you know, I know Mike is still rooting us on. You know, he was still our quarterback. He's still part of this team. And we're here as a team, as an organization, and standing behind him strong. You know, it's nobody likes to see anyone get injured. Especially our quarterback. So, you know, him dealing with that, you know, much prayers and blessings towards him and his family going through what he has to go through.
You know, one thing about guys like Jalen Walker, who basically, you know, from your high school career, you know, all the way through to Georgia, you don't lose a lot of games. How tough is this from a mental standpoint? Because you're not used to this. It's certainly not playing for Kirby Smart.
Right. You know, it's a week-to-week thing. You know, you just got to focus on the week. You know, you can't dwell on losses that you had before.
Cause it's very Kirby-ish.
You can't go back to them.
It's very Kirby-ish.
You can't go back to them. And, of course, you know, you got to look for the Saints. You know, honestly, somebody asked me I was just at home doing a charity event for my foundation, giving away Thanksgiving dinners. And they asked me, who are you playing next week? And I told them, I have no idea. Just because the Saints is the main topic for the week.
Yeah. As far as you and James Pierce, man, What's it been like? I mean, you are the two guys that a lot of people feel like are the foundation of the building blocks of this defense for years to come, hopefully. And you're both of you guys, you know, the development right there and working together and your relationship. What's it like?
It's great. The progress of the relationship has built since the day we first seen each other coming off the plane, being able here to walk through Flowery Branch and, you know, just seeing him grow, seeing myself grow each week. We push each other to the maximum just to get better and be that take that extra step to, you know, get out on the field and have success.
Is he crazy?
He just like me.
No, I like it. I like it.
It's a dynamic duo. Man, that plays at New England. I was just jumping up and down, losing my mind. That athleticism on display. And, I mean, you talk to what's the relationship with Ulbrich? I mean, release the hounds. Dial up some more of that for me, Coach. How does that work as far as the game plan?
Right. You know, it's just,
but just you beating your man. That's it.
It's one-on-one opportunities that we get. It comes through our scheme, you know, with the great scheme and game plan that we have in the beginning of the week and doing it all week long and executing it on Sunday is just like poetry in motion. Getting able to see that happen live is nice.
So as we talk about the defense and Jeff Ulbrich, learning this defense, how much different has it been for you coming from college? Or has it been very similar with what you guys did at Georgia from, and not just a schematic standpoint, maybe even the language or the calls itself?
Language different.
Okay.
Scheme different.
Okay.
But and also for myself, position is different. You know, that's another thing that simplified everything down for me just to hone in on one position this year. It has been very nice for myself, and especially on my mental of me just being in my rookie season, you know, just getting along. It's been great, you know, just developing into that system and learning that scheme. You know, it's been a progress, but it's been a progress in the right direction.
You like that? Because you did play all over the place for Kirby, right? And then they came, you got here, and they said, I remember talking to coaches, and they said, look, he's going to play, he's going to do one thing, we want him to do it really well. You saying it made it easier for you, do you prefer that, or do you prefer to be in the middle, on the end, and in coverage, and all the stuff that you did at Georgia?
Yeah, I said this before, I'm a ball player, so if you put me on the edge, I'll play that edge. If you put me in the middle and want me to play multiple positions, I'll do that as well. But, you know, having the defense we have now with our inside backers, Caden and Devine, those guys coming back up this week. Devine coming back up this week, and especially just, you know, me just being on the edge, it's just great. You know, it's just playing complimentary football because there's a lot of different keys and that the offense have to look at, and they can't slide to both sides. And that's always what I say. You can't slide to both sides, can't block everybody, can't come scot-free. So
right. One of the cool games this year, it seems like it's a century ago now, is up in Minnesota.
Right.
In that environment, which is just a bananas. And you, man, those people got quiet. There was no Viking horn. How much fun was that? I mean, because that seemed like it was like the coming out party where you really were throwing J.J. You're basically throwing people around like rag dolls in that game.
Yeah, it was an awesome experience. You know, I got the MO during the week that the Vikings have a great fan base, great stadium environment, in which it was. Don't get me wrong. You know, seeing that in an NFL stadium is surreal.
But like,
you know,
a college vibe.
Correct. But, you know, at the end of the day, we got to take care of business ourselves. So we just did what we did and, you know, had the opportunity to get that win.
Jalen Walker, what's up?
I was going to say, you got some downtime. Did you get to watch the whole Texas game?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Why you got to say it like that?
Yeah, I did.
You see the way he shook his head? He's like, as a matter of fact, I did get a chance to watch all of that.
I did.
Well, you guys crushed him in Austin, right?
Right.
I mean, you remember that well, because, I mean, that was one of the first times that Georgia's going to Austin, handled business.
Correct.
I thought this was impressive in a different way because this year's team, Jalen, and you know this, unlike the couple of years that you were there, obviously, the expectation coming into the year was like, what are they going to be? How good the defense is going to be? I said this today. I've said it the last few days. I think they're playing the best football right now in the SEC, man. I really do. I think they're peaking at the right time.
Right.
You know about that. How important is that to, like, what you are in September is certainly not what you are come 1st of December.
You're right. Yeah, it's a progress throughout the season. You know, the buzz before the season, we don't know about the Georgia defense. We don't know about that. Me personally, everybody asks me, what do you think? I don't think anything, because I know the expectation in the building. One,
right.
I know the expectation in the players that we have. And mind you, I play with half the guys still there. So I still know the expectation that in the standard that they hold for themselves. So I felt no worry, no anxiousness going into the season, because I knew that what comes on the plate, they'll take care of.
Right. And they are peaking at the right time, period.
Yeah. You want to talk about those Tuesday practices? What's that, what they call that down there?
Bloody Tuesday.
Is it really that bad, man?
It is.
Y'all get after it like that?
We make sure that Tuesday is harder than the game. So we come in on Tuesday with your mind right, you know, knowing that this will be much harder than you will face on Saturday.
The quote that we loved, well, maybe Carl not so much, but the fact that you're coming to Georgia and some guys just want to curb, some guys just want to check, you know, and you come to Georgia, you're going to hit. And that was basically a message to Texas and some of the other programs. But when you play there, I mean, there's just it's an ethos, a philosophy. You got it. And people, they just take it to the next level, as you are.
Yeah. I mean, like Coach Smart says, if you don't want to come to Georgia, if you don't like it, you know, a tough coaching, it's not the place for you. And mind you, I live that. I've lived that that lifestyle for those 3 years and seen the guys before me live that lifestyle. The thing is, I love about Coach Smart, he doesn't change. With this new space, going into the NIL realm and things like that, I know that might change. But the way Coach Smart coaches and pushes those people to that standard, it will never change.
Jalen, man, loving what you're doing, brother, and continue the great work.
So good to see you out there, man.
It is. It's good to see you back out there doing your thing. We've been waiting and anxiously waiting to get you back on the field, so we appreciate you. Good luck against New Orleans, man.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all.
All right, there he is, guys. Yes, Jalen Walker, go Dawgs.
Carl was so – oh, that was funny to hear. Carl was so – you know what? The word I'll use is Orin, affected. By that interview.
Yeah, he was affected by that interview.
Because Jalen Walker's coming in strutting, you know, doing the 6'7 meme in Carl's face, essentially. Saying, what? Hook him who? Horns down, baby. All right, let's get
back. They weren't afraid to throw him up.
No.
I should say.
No, throw them down, man. Let's get back into the Falcons conversation with our buddy Joe Patrick, our Falcons insider. Stops by next. Let's get everything on the table. Shall we with
Joe?
Get
it out there.
Yeah, like what's the exact timeline? What's the exact injury? Let's make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed here. We'll do that next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our Falcons insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on football. Joe, let's just, before we dive into the ramifications of everything, let's make sure everything's straight because there's been a lot of reporting about Michael Penix Jr.'s injury, his timeline for recovery, the type of surgery that he needs. So let's make it all nice and clear for the people. What is the injury? What is the expected timetable? And what is going on with Michael Penix Jr.?
Yeah, I can make this crystal clear for everybody because I know that there was some confusion on this today. He has a partial ACL tear. That is the diagnosis. But the recovery for that is a full reconstruction repair of the ACL. So regardless of, how much was torn, that does not really affect the extent of how much time it's going to take for him to rehabilitate that injury. Now, I think that what the partial tear does indicate is that he will be able to basically be better once he does come back from it. Like the ACL will just be in better condition once it is recovered, but the surgery is going to necessitate the full recovery, no matter if it was a full tear or partial tear or whatever. So he is going to be out for, what they say about ACLs nowadays is that it's a 9-month recovery. I think that is incredibly ambitious to think that Michael Penix will be able to recover in 9 months and be playing NFL football at that point. I believe that, basically after 9 months, he will then be able to, I don't know about start doing physical stuff. I'm sure he'll obviously there will be a gradual implementation there. But you would think that after 9 months, he will hopefully at that point be able to start doing some football activities. And, the worrisome thing about this, Chris, is that I feel like most of the improvements that Penix had to make was with regards to a lot of the physical stuff, the accuracy, the footwork, potentially playing under center. And, that is the kind of stuff he's not going to be able to do during the duration of this rehab. So it's unfortunate for him, but he's going to be out for, you just consider it like anybody else if it had torn their ACL. That's basically what happened here.
Okay, so with all of that being said, the timeline for Kirk Cousins' remaining tenure in Atlanta, we know he's going to be the starting quarterback here for the rest of the season, but It seems like, based on the money, Joe, and correct me if I'm wrong, the most logical thing to do for the Falcons cap-wise is designate him as a post-June 1st cut, take a little bit of a hit, but ultimately not have to pay him or have him account for $50-plus million on the cap next year.
That's right. That's right. I believe Kirk Cousins will play for the Falcons for 7 more games, and that will be the last time that he plays for the organization, because you're right. The most responsible thing to do, you know, really the Falcons, you know, because this has kind of really flipped the path of the organization and the team on its head, you know, now you really do have to prioritize kind of the cap sheet and what the salary cap looks like going into 2027, really. And, you know, that means that Kirk Cousins, you have to basically take whatever monies are left on the contract. And I haven't actually added up and actually done all the math and looked at the actual numbers, but you want to basically eat as much of that next year as possible. So that's what I believe is going to happen. And it was even reported, even before Michael Penix was drafted and Kirk Cousins was thought to be the long-term quarterback, you know, for this team after he signed his deal. And I believe it was Albert Breer who wrote this column, but I could be wrong about that. But at the end of this, you know, lengthy report that kind of gave the inside access to the inner workings of how the deal came together, there was an anecdote, and at the end of that, talking about how Mike McCartney, his agent, shook hands with Terry Fontenot in the Falcons parking lot and said, "We'll see you here in 2 years," because that contract, that 4-year, $180 million contract that was publicized, was never really a 4-year contract. The terms of the deal were always structured so that after the first 2 years, they would come to an agreement to either release him, which is, you know, the path that we're currently on, or there was another path, obviously, where if he was playing amazing, they would essentially do a contract extension at that point and never get to the last 2 years of that deal, which are, like, incredibly pricey, obviously. So that's the situation we're at, and it really, that throws the Falcons' future up in the air, because you thought you had your quarterback situation sorted as much as you possibly could have, and ultimately the team doesn't really have any quarterback it can rely upon going into next season.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going. Obviously, it's impossible to know what they're going to do, or even right now, because it's so early in the process, what the best option is. But do you feel like that it is in the best interest of the Falcons, based off of what you've seen so far in his career, to fully hand him the keys back once he's healthy? Or do you think it is prudent for the Falcons to, pun intended, have a backup plan, meaning either a veteran, a draft pick, or maybe even a trade for another established quarterback? Because, Joe, it's just the facts. We all love Michael Penix Jr. Yeah. and the potential yep. talent, but you have 5 season-ending injuries by age 26. Yeah. You can't help it.
Yeah. No, I know. That's what's really unfortunate about it. And I'm sure the people, you know, in Flowery Branch and the offices upstairs are pulling their hair out about the fact that it's come down to this. And, you know, when you get into next year, that will be obviously the third year of his deal. And you hope, I think, you know, the best case scenario in terms of, like, getting, you know, making this Michael Penix's team again is, you know, let's just call it halfway through next season, although it might even be a little bit later than halfway through next season. You're able to kind of get him back as the QB1. And basically at that point, you're continuing the evaluation, which is, like, it's shocking to be still evaluating, making kind of like the initial evaluation of your quarterback in his third year of the NFL. But, you know, that's just the way, obviously, it's going to have come together at that point. And, you know, then you're approaching, you know, whether you want to actually do a fifth year option for him, if you want to, you know, kind of pull that trigger. And if you do, you know, at the end of that, you know, that off season, next off season, you will not have had many games to actually look at to evaluate. And that's, you know, a costly move to make. And so that's where, when you start to think, like, long-term about it, you do think that, okay, I think the Falcons have to be considering a different long-term plan. And it's not to say that you just kind of throw Michael Penix out the window. He should definitely get looks next season. And, you know, again, that was kind of the whole point of the rest of this season, basically, was to continue that evaluation. But, you know, the Falcons aren't going to have that opportunity for another year. So you have to get someone in. And, you know, I think that you are obviously looking at somebody who's kind of that cost-effective type of quarterback, whether that's like, you know, I feel like Jacoby Brissett is now like the perfect model, basically, for this type of quarterback that you want to get in that can at least kind of keep the ship generally going in the right direction, but not, you know, necessarily the long-term solution. So you're going to have to get a quarterback in like that. I think the bigger question is whether this team needs to go back to the draft and, you know, again, spend kind of their top capital on a quarterback. And obviously they don't have a first round pick this year, but do they need to do that in the future? You know, time will tell.
Is it even fair, as we're talking with Joe Patrick, check out Joe Patrick on Football 92.9 The Game, Falcons Insider. Like, is it? And then the other thing too, Joe, is you just peel back the onions and it's just unbelievable how deep this thing goes. Is it even fair to judge Kirk Cousins right now, given the state of the offense with Zach Robinson, no Drake London, Chris Lindstrom banged up, Bergeron banged up? I mean, is it even Mooney can't catch a cold? I mean, what is Kirk even dealing with right now?
I know. And for that reason, Chris, I fear what could happen on Sunday. And by the way, the Saints are 1.5-point favorites over this Falcons team right now, which shows you just kind of the depths that they've hit really, you know, really suddenly over these last, you know, the last month or so. Things have just been in a tailspin they can't get out of. But honestly, I don't expect great things, you know, because of what we've seen from Kirk Cousins. Not only in his couple starts this year or his couple of appearances this year where you can say, okay, well, he didn't get the week of training, you know, the practice game plan kind of around him because things were up in the air. But even at the end of last year, I mean, yeah, okay, maybe he wasn't even fully healthy at that point. But I have seen no indication that Kirk Cousins is going to beat opponents with his arm, especially when he doesn't have Drake London in the lineup. Because what I've seen, Chris, is when Kirk Cousins plays, teams stack the box to stop Bijan Robinson. They blitz and make sure they get pressure on Kirk Cousins, and they play really aggressive man coverage against these wideouts and say, beat us over the top, Kirk Cousins. You know, beat us over the top. Beat us with a deep ball. And I just don't think that he really has it in him. And I don't even know if the Falcons receivers are all that capable of creating separation for him to even make those throws and have those opportunities. So it's going to be, I think, a really tough stretch for this Falcons offense here down the end of the season.
About the defense, also equally frustrating, Joe, because you look at it, they got like almost the most sacks in the entire NFL, which they haven't done that since, I think, before you and I were born. And then you look at the rest of the defense, and in three games this season, you give up 185 total yards to McCaffrey, 300 yards to Jonathan Taylor, and then almost 500 yards passing to Bryce Young. So, like, which is it? Like, are they Jekyll or are they Hyde? It's so frustrating, Joe.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, I give a lot of credit to Jeff Ulbrich, especially earlier in the season, for kind of being able to frankly scheme up and being clever with this defense and scheme around their opponents, and they had some success early in the year. But I think that what we're starting to see in these more recent weeks, especially when they've been starting to miss some players, whether it's Zach Harrison on the defensive line or last week when the team was without basically three cornerbacks, like three of their best cornerbacks outside of AJ Terrell, you just can't kind of scheme around all these things, and you can't plug up every single hole, and ultimately these opposing offenses have been able to sniff out these vulnerabilities in the Falcons' defense and been able to exploit them rather ruthlessly. And I asked Jeff today, Ulbrich, you know, about this team and kind of where they are, and he said that one of the things that he's got to kind of, you know, manage with these individual players is not to feel like you're doing too much, because with everything that's going on, obviously, on the offense, people feel, you know, for Penix, and there's a lot of emotion there, but there's also like an understanding, like, we need to be better to help carry this team. And I think what he said was that, you know, these players have a tendency to try to overstep and just do too much. It's not out of like, it's actually what you want to see in terms of having like the energy and motivation to help the team. But ultimately, if you're trying to do somebody else's job and your own, that's kind of an impossible task. And it feels like it's possible to players. They feel like they're supermen out there, but ultimately they are mere mortals. And so, you know, he's just going to have to be clever with the way that he phrases calls like deploying resources, how he deploys his defensive resources towards their opponents. And maybe this week is a little bit easier of a task, obviously, against a Saints offense that is not as dynamic as some of the ones they've seen so far this year. But, you know, frankly, they've just not been very good over the last few weeks, despite the fact that they have been able to do, like you said, Chris, the one thing that they've kind of had as their goal coming into this season, which was to rush the passer. They've been doing a great job of that, but it's not really helping in the results.
Before I let you go, what do you make of Raheem Morris's stoic approach and process with the media dealing with this losing streak? It feels like the fans are starting to get a little sick and tired of some repetitive coach speak, and that his lack of emotion and also seemingly, to a certain extent, I think these are my words, not yours, isolating at least a portion of the fan base by saying things like, you know, emotions are for y'all. Those are for y'all, the process. We need to be here sort of on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I kind of feel like pity almost. He doesn't seem to have solutions. At least he's not presenting any kind of to us. It's tough. Like I feel for him because, you know, everything is kind of blown up in his face, so to speak. But also it's like, I don't know. I don't see a lot of like, you know, and I hesitate, Chris, just because, like, you know, what he says to us and what he says to his team behind closed doors and what he's presenting to us and what he's presenting to his team can be totally different things. But I just don't sense like a great concept of how to motivate this group going forward, or not even motivate, but just like tactically how to get them functioning in a better way, because this offense has been frankly dysfunctional for the better part of the last month, even with Michael Penix. So, and it's a shame because things were looking so much better with him having that, you know, 11 for 12 first half last week. And it looked like, you know, maybe you were starting to get something going, but I'm kind of with you, Chris, and just the general feeling of just not inspiring a lot of confidence. And it's a shame because, you know, that's like the one thing that you kind of rely on Raheem Morris to do is inspire confidence. And it just kind of feels like managed decline at this point.
Joe, great stuff. We'll talk next week. We'll see what Kirko and part two here has for us in store. It's going to be a very interesting rest of the season here. Great stuff on the pod. We'll chat next week.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Chris. Appreciate it.
Great stuff there from Joe Patrick. When we get back to close out the show, Braves made another move. This one is interesting. It could be a sign of things to come, or it could just be a depth move. I'll explain what this is. Oren and I will break it down when we get back to close up shop here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Last chance for a romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Turtle with you till the top of the hour. Our buddy Day-Day Lewis comes your way then with some Prep Sports Nation. All you high school fans, make sure you're locked and loaded for that one. Before we get out of here, Braves all of a sudden decided on a random Wednesday night, we're going to start wheeling and dealing this offseason, and they made two significant moves tonight. So we'll finish up there. Oren, one we discussed, and that is, and we'll get back into it here in a minute, that is Raisel Iglesias is coming back on a one-year, $16 million deal. Now, again, we've been checking the tape, so to speak, on social media, getting the pulse. All the pundits and everybody that the opinions that we respect from the Braves, you know, the Dave O'Briens, the Grant McCauleys, the Mark Bowmans, everybody out there seems to be almost universally applauding the move to bring back Raisel. I'm not quite there. It's more about the 16 mil and maybe where else that could have been spent on a rather than a 36-year-old closer who for half the season last year was unplayable. Now, to his credit, he turned it around, had a great second half, was one of the best relievers in baseball. But, you know, he's another year older. That $16 million is a lot of money. And, you know, the Braves have holes to fill. Well, Oren, in the last 15 minutes, they may have filled one of those holes, depending on how he performs this year.
Go but, on.
The Braves made another move. They have traded with the Houston Astros, and they have acquired Jose Altuve. No, I'm just kidding.
See, it's an old bat coming here, yes.
No, they are acquiring Mauricio Dubon for Nick Allen. Now, a lot of you were probably – that's why I made the Jose Altuve joke, because a lot of you are probably like, what? I don't even know. Nick Allen's the plucky shortstop that we had last year, right?
Yeah, at one point he
– the guy who couldn't hit his weight. I mean –
no, he was a bottom-of-the-lineup dweller.
Yeah, and, you know, Mauricio Dubon might be a name that, like, hardcore baseball fans know, but, Oren, I think if we just took 10 Braves fans on the street and said, can you pick Mauricio Dubon out of a lineup –
if he wasn't wearing a Houston Astros jersey, people probably wouldn't know.
No, and even if he was, I think the large majority of them probably still wouldn't. I think the guys, again, I think probably Yordan Alvarez and Jose Altuve, those are probably the guys you could pick out of the Houston Astros lineup.
That's probably about it.
Probably.
And then maybe if they threw like...
Iglesias, the shortstop.
Or then maybe they threw Clemens in there too.
Yeah,
that's about it. Or Lance Berkman, one of those guys.
Lance Berkman. Jeff Bagwell, how far back?
Craig Biggio, throw him in the mix too.
Roy Oswalt, how many names we want to?
Got a Doug Drayback. Throw a Doug Drayback
nice.
In there.
Good pull right there, man. I'll give you one. You want the piece de resistance
right
here?
Let's do it, man.
Mike Scott.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Closer, out. Right?
No, he was the starter. He was the guy that was scuffing the balls.
That's right, yes.
In the World Series. How about that? We're going way back file right there. So Mauricio Dubon, getting back to the actual news here, is definitely an upgrade from Nick Allen. He's not completely inept as a hitter. He hit about 240 last year. I mean, he's not an auto. Nick Allen was an automatic out.
He's going to be... similar to Nick Allen, he's going to be dwelling at from 7 and 8 and 9. He's going to be in those positions right
there. He can steal bases. He had 25 bags, I think, a couple of years ago. So he's got some speed. He's 31. No power whatsoever. I think in a 10-year career, he has 30 home runs.
You let the power guy, so to speak, go. And, well, the more power guy that you weren't going to bring back in Ha-Seong Kim. So.
Well.
A bigger bat, if you will, yes.
Yeah, he's good for 15, 16 home runs a year, Kim. But here's the thing. He can play second. He can play short.
Slick fielding, man.
And he can play the outfield.
Couple gold gloves.
So he becomes it. Now, here's the caveat, Oren. He better not be your starting shortstop opening day. If he is, I'm going to blow a gasket.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. Why should he not be the starting shortstop on opening day?
Because the Atlanta Braves have a standard, Oren Romain.
Gotcha.
That standard is we want to compete for a World Series title.
And having
and
Mauricio Dubon being your
30
shortstop.
And if you want to compete for a World Series title.
Doesn't send that message?
No, Mauricio Dubon is not the answer. If you're the Reds, if you're the Pirates, if you're, you know, the Brewers who spackle and put it together seemingly every year, okay, maybe that's acceptable. If you're the Braves, Mauricio Dubon is not your starting shortstop, my God.
So basically you're trading Nick Allen for Mauricio Dubon, and if Mauricio's starting shortstop, might as well just go ahead and flip that trade back and bring back Nick Allen. Is that what you're saying?
Well, where's your level of integrity if you're the Atlanta Braves at that point? That's not an acceptable solution. Like, I'm sorry to be so harsh, but actually not really. You won 70 games last year. You were an embarrassment. You got all these injuries. You changed the manager. It's all right. Like, come on. Like, I'm snapping my finger. Like, let's go here. Mauricio Dubon is not your starting shortstop if you're a competitive baseball team. He's a 2-time Gold Glove winner. Here's the caveat, Oren. As a utility man.
Ooh, so you can't put him
He's a 2-time Gold Glove winning shortstop. As a utility guy.
Moving him around.
Not the starter. So there's your caveat. Super utility guy. Shortstop, second base, outfield.
They're really excited about this Mauricio Dubon trade because 4 minutes ago, the Atlanta Braves sent me an email welcoming to the A, Mauricio Dubon.
I mean, he'll be probably your main bench guy in a perfect world. And he can if
your utility guy is a Gold Glove winner, that's and has stolen 25 bases last year. That's not a bad guy to have as your utility guy.
That's an excellent move on their part. But if you dare try to tell me that he's the starter, a gasket will be blown on this radio station.
So what you're saying, Chris, is they should be – these are the moves right now that are sort of, you know, the appetizers, if you will. The main course still should be coming in terms of big bats or another bullpen
arm. This is spackling, a spackle spot. That's what this is, a $16 million spackle spot. You are praying that Raisel Iglesias is the guy from the second half of last year. And you gave him a truckload of money on a one-year deal.
Yeah, you did.
Like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, you did.
Mauricio Dubon ain't going to cost you $16 million.
His deal next year, I looked it up. He is scheduled to make $6.8 million next year.
So he's essentially making what Ozzy's making.
Yeah, and he's arbitration eligible. And 26.
And honestly, that's the main – in all seriousness, that's the main reason you bring him in. Because if Ozzy gets off to another slow start, hey, Mauricio, grab that gold glove and get out there at second base. Get out there at second base.
You don't have to pretend to be as well. If Ozzy's sucking at the plate, just say
– Ozzy was sucking in the field too. That's the problem.
Just do better than 215 and
– and seven errors. I mean, dude, he was not good on – he really got affected by those injuries, I think. So it's a if it's a spackle spot, great job by the Braves, including giving $16 million to Raisel Iglesias. Good job. If these are like, Oren, if these are like foundational moves for the offseason, the rivulets of sweat are already starting to accumulate on my forehead.
70-win team once? No, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to put him at a 70-win team. But, no, I'll say this. In terms of, it's always about, you know, out of these moves kind of shake the meter for not just the hardcore Braves fan, but like a casual fan. And if I'm hearing as a casual fan, you brought back Raisel Iglesias and Mauricio Dubon, from a team who did not win as many games last year as they lost. I don't know where the excitement lies with the utility man and...
No, and the only reason we're not giving the Braves the benefit of the doubt is sample size. I mean, it's just right in front. They just don't make big moves. I mean, that's unfortunately the sample size of the last few years. Matt Olson was a big move. I'll give him credit for that. Signing Riley to that deal was a big move. Other than that, I mean, you let Fried go, you let Dansby go, you let Freddie go. Those were big money moves. You didn't make any of them. So, you know, that's where my hesitation comes in. Hey, if it's, you know, January 15th and Mauricio Dubon is nice and settled in as that first option off the bench and you got, you know, Kim or Bichette or somebody else at shortstop, I'll be one happy camper. But if batting ninth and playing shortstop on opening day is Mauricio Dubon, Oren, we have ourselves a fundamental issue. With the Atlanta Braves.
Ooh-ooh.
That is my concern right now.
Ooh-ooh.
Good player, nice rotational piece, will be a key member that'll make starts for you throughout the season with injuries. Flexible, versatile, great glove, speedy, can hit a little bit, a tiny smidgen. Which anything, literally, me and you would have been an upgrade compared to Nick Allen at the plate.
I got a big bat, man.
And you got a big-ass strike zone, my friend.
I do. I am swinging one way or the other, buddy.
Vlad Guerrero Jr., that thing, man.
One thing's going to happen. Two things are going to happen. I'm either hitting that ball over the fence or I'm striking out. One of the two.
And those are two of the three outcomes.
Strike out,
walk, or home run.
Yeah.
Those are the three true outcomes that every GM goes crazy for.
Singles are for little leaguers.
Stats are for losers.
To quote a man.
All right, that'll do it for this
that
edition.
Man.
Yeah, that man. Of Chris Thomas and I'd appreciate everybody that called in about the Falcons. We'll talk more about them tomorrow. Some fun breaking news to react to with the Braves about Raisel Iglesias and Mauricio Dubon. Tomorrow we'll talk some Hawks with Caleb Johnson. Got it all covered for you. We talked Georgia Bulldogs tonight as well with Ian Valentino. If you missed any of that, just download the podcast Chris Thomas Tonight wherever you get your podcasts. Our guy Day-Day Lewis is up next. Don't go anywhere on 92.9 The Game.
Night, 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 night